Hello, everyone, and welcome back. And it is awesome to be back. You've just tuned in to Set for Success with your host. That's me, Richard Lannan. And guess what we're going to do today? We're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, your career, your life. And how are we going to do that? Through chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their success, so that you can create the success that you deserve. And you know what? Realistically, we want you to be successful in your business, and that's why we do this. It's time for the Set for Success quote. I know, I announce it every single time, but I love quotes and I read at least one quote a day, and it's intentionally. It is better to hang out with people better than you. Pick out good associates whose behavior is better than yours, and you'll drift in that direction. Now, guess who said that? That was Warren Buffett. Now, I don't know if you know who Warren Buffett is, but Warren Buffett is probably one of the most richest men in the world. He started, if I know the history right, you can always contact me and correct me. He started with very little and he made a fortune. So I'm hoping that is correct. And I actually read some of his material. So, you know, that's a whole other story. Listen, if I am looking for people, I'm always looking for people who are better than me to hang out with, to talk to. And I guess that's probably why I maybe do this show and try to bring that to you on a weekly basis. I was chatting with a client a few weeks ago and he asked me, why didn't I just do all the work myself? And I looked at him sort of funny and I said, well, why would I do that? I think it's better for the clients if you come together as a team. And I like, if anybody knows me, they know I like teams of three, the triads. I learned about that in school many years ago when I was studying business. But, you know, if you're working alone on a project to solve a problem, you may miss things. You may not totally solve the issues, or you might be blinded by your own weaknesses. So, but if you bring people around you that are better than you, who have skills that you don't have, you get a different perspective that maybe, just maybe, creates a win for everybody. You may gravitate towards doing better work. And the key is finding those people and the expertise to connect with. And you will naturally improve in your business. I came across my guest, Jennifer, on LinkedIn. And then through her website, I was intrigued by the work that she was doing in businesses and the transition to solve problems with the right resources today and tomorrow to make sure their businesses are successful. I checked out some of her videos and material and thought, here is a person that I want on my team. This is a person that in the future, at some point in time, I want to connect with and I would like to work with. And maybe, just maybe, you'd like to work with too. So Jennifer Bartman, welcome to Set for Success.
Well, thanks for having me.
I'm totally excited about having you on the show. And I think I'm pretty sure it was on LinkedIn I first sent you a message. I think I might have saw something that you actually post around business. It could have been a video or an article or something.
That's probably right.
Yeah. So you do spend some time on social media with some of the key business information.
Sure do.
Yeah. You know, Jennifer, to kick things off, I just before we started to kick off the show, I talked to you a little bit that I don't actually read people's bios. I always like it when the guest tells the listeners a bit about themselves. So why don't we just start off in that space and say, you know, Jennifer, who is Jennifer? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'd say my background is a little bit unusual, and a lot of that I think is fueled by the fact that I'm generally a very, very curious person. And so I'm a business advisor with a background in venture capital, management consulting, and also I also have an accounting designation as well. And so, you know, I started out pursuing the chartered accountancy designation, really knowing that I wanted to do something different with it than be your typical accountant. Not that there's anything wrong with that, of course, but you know, to really find a way to use that designation as part of my toolkit to do something that was more of a fit for my own personality. And so in doing that, I stumbled on management consulting in a lot of ways and pursued my certified management consultant CMC designation there, and consulted for a number of years, really, to a range of businesses, was working with one of the larger consulting firms, came across a venture capital business soon after that was just kind of getting started. And for me, you know, for all the businesses that I had seen in my life and my times articling as in the CA program and consulting with companies, venture capital was fascinating to me. Had never really come across a business quite like that. And really, for those who don't know, venture capital is the business of raising money and investing it in young and emerging companies. You know, many of these companies, they don't have a track record at all. Some of them might be startups. Some of them might be very young. And so you learn about the fundamental things that businesses should do, regardless of their size, to be successful. And so that was fascinating for me. I spent about 10 years as an operator in the venture capital industry. And it's just been just this year, in fact, I think this month, in fact, 10 years that I've been a business advisor working for myself, still active in the venture capital industry, but doing a lot of other things, developing courses, speaking. I'm a published author. I do some media work as well. And it's just about, for me, changing it up and finding different ways to share the experiences that I've gained.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things I appreciated about your background when I started reading up on you, that I really love the diversity. You know, it's like you have this thing about, just a lot of diversity in your experience, which I think maybe you can address this a little bit, but from my perspective, I think it would help you, no matter what industry you're dealing with, to sort of understand the industries a bit better.
Yes, and that's exactly right. For me, I have an interest in understanding companies and organizations on a holistic basis. So as an advisor, you know, it's not just about what's going on in the marketing function or what's going on in human resources or production or, you know, whatever functional area you want to choose, but it's understanding from a business perspective what's going on across that company, because all of those pieces relate together and you're not going to be successful. Just like an engine, you have to have everything firing equally and well in order to propel that vehicle forward. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that relates to my curiosity, I would say, that has allowed me to spend time in pretty much any functional area in a company that you could mention.
Yeah, it's interesting you would say that, because I call it finding your setability factor. So it's a phrase that I coined in my book also. So we'll talk a bit about books, but the idea that you can fine tune your business so you can achieve consistent measurable results for positive impact. Mm-hmm. And it's all based on the concept that a business is a machine.
Mm-hmm. Right? And it's a balance, right?
Yes.
It's a balance between those functional areas. I sometimes talk to clients about what I call the pillars, where you have, you know, if you can imagine one of those old, buildings that has the pillars, historic type building, and you come up to the front of it, and, you know, one of the pillars could be the sales function. One of the pillars could be the administrative function. One of the pillars could be finance, and then production, and then people and human resources, and then there's the roof that the pillars hold up. And I always say to clients, and I'll show them this visually, is that companies can have some pillars within their business that are developed to 150%, and then some other ones that are nowhere near that. And what happens? The roof falls down. Yeah, if you don't have that balance, the roof is going to fall down.
So with that in mind, why don't we come back and talk about avoiding having your roof fall down. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Jennifer Bartman, and Jennifer is an expert in the management consulting field. And we were talking a little bit about the pillars of a business in relation to like a building, you know. And so, Jennifer, I think, you know, what are some of the key challenges? I guess, you know, there's certain areas you mentioned that some pillars are like 150%, and I'm assuming some are negative 50, you know, like really underdeveloped. And, you know, so what are some of the things that maybe businesses do, the challenges, or the, you know, where they create this problem for themselves?
Well, a very common problem, and I say this coming from my experience as a venture capitalist and an investor, a very, very common problem with companies is that they tend to spend far too much time and effort on their product or service. And yes, of course, products and services have to work. We all know that. Otherwise, you don't have a business. But the point is that business owners have a tendency to focus on what it is that they know how to do or what they're passionate about. And that often relates to products or services. So they spend all their time focused on that, but not as much time developing the other functional areas that you need to actually build a company. So whether it's sales and business development, whether it's administration, certainly finance is a key and critical one, human resources, getting the right people in the right places. And so what ends up happening is that you have this product or, you know, potential development of products that are, as you say, 150% of that pillar, and these other critical areas to actually build out a company that haven't been adequately addressed. And so an external party like an investor will look at that and say, you know what, there's really not a company here. We have a product that maybe, again, if it's an emerging business, we've had some success getting that into the marketplace. We have some customers that like that product or service, but we're not in a position to build capacity because these other areas are just so underdeveloped. So weak, and that's right? One of the key reasons. It's not the only reason, but that's one of the key reasons why investments don't happen.
Yeah, I like the term to build capacity. You know, you mentioned, you know, the companies don't have the ability to build capacity. Is that generally through a weakness of maybe the leadership that's in place at that point in time? Is like, what generally would foster that inability to build capacity?
I think in some respects, and again, there can be different reasons, but in some respects, it is a lack of experience. You know, unless you have successfully built a number of businesses and have been through this, you probably don't have the experience of what's required. And like I was saying before, business owners or entrepreneurs, they're so focused on the product and they think that all they have to do is put that in front of people and the rest kind of takes care of itself. But the reality is that all those other functional areas that we're talking about, that's the implementation. Mm. And so, you know, as we're chatting a bit off air, you can run out and generate interest around your product and you can make, you know, quote unquote sales. But if you can't deliver, because you don't have the right people, you don't have the right production capacity, you don't have capital in place from a financing perspective, you don't know where you're at, all these things, doesn't matter how great the product is, you can't follow through. And So I think, you know, part of it is a lack of experience in understanding how important those areas are, because the product isn't the business, it's just a piece of it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's one of those functional areas. So I think that's part of it. I think also further to your introduction is really thinking about who it is that you need around you to build a successful company. And some business leaders are really good at that. They're great at saying, you know what, we need the best people that we can find. We need to put them in the right position and we need to let them do the things that they know how to do to fulfill that functional area. And then there are some that are just a little bit more reluctant to do that. There can be a range of reasons as why. Maybe they're not as confident. Maybe they need to feel that they're in charge. Maybe these areas are intimidating to them. You know, finance is a key one for that. Not every, and I would say most entrepreneurs and business leaders don't have a finance background formally, right? And so they don't address those areas as well as they should.
It's interesting that you would say that, because twice in the last week and a half I've had to address that. And one was I was doing a lecture, happened to be on finance. Okay, so basic accounting, managing money and everything in Canada. And then I was actually talking to a client, and the phrase I ended up having to use with both audiences, if you wish, one-on-one and that, you don't know your business. No, if you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. Mm-hmm. And I find that a lot with entrepreneurs that or small business owners, that they don't completely understand their numbers, and so they don't know their business.
What's really interesting about that is, though I don't call myself an accountant, having that accounting background, for me, one of the quickest ways to learn any business, and I've worked in many, many industries. If you name one, you know, chances are I've had something to do with it across my career. But it's the numbers that help me understand the business. That's one of the reasons why when I first start working with clients, one of the things I like to see and request are their financial statements, so I can understand how the money is actually moving, because it helps you understand their business, but then it also raises questions about, you know, why is this happening and should it be happening?
Yeah.
So very much.
And what you're referring to is, just so we say for our listeners, is the income statement and the balance sheet.
Right.
Is
and cash flow statement and the notes.
And the notes.
If they're annual statements, I mean, it's from an accountant perspective.
Chartered accountant. Yeah, there should be notes on the statement. Yeah.
These are things that our accountants are interested in for sure. But yeah, it helps us understand almost the plumbing to be able to follow how the money is moving. And it's a fundamental piece of any business that often doesn't get the attention that it needs. And to view it again from an investor perspective, you'll see companies, particularly technology companies, who will go and find an engineer for every position or a scientist for positions that maybe don't even need to be there just yet. But yet there's nobody with a qualified background in the finance chair. And why does it matter? Because the investor is going to be saying, all right, who's taking care of my money here? You know, who am I going to have a conversation
and,
with?
And what's going on?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's another example of that.
You know what we need to do? We need to take a short break, but we'll be right back. You know what? I think what we'll talk about is maybe investor readiness, because I know during one of the breaks, we were just chatting about this. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Jennifer Bartman, and we've been talking about business, one of my favorite topics. My wife often says to me, do you ever not talk about business and money? I love the topic of business money. And yeah, I do. You listen to my shows. I know I have some personal human shows and everything too. But today, you know what? We want to really start to understand the heart of business, because when it comes to, Jennifer, when it comes to family businesses, or it comes to small businesses or even mid-range businesses, I mean, there's some key challenges that happen. I know that one of the things I was looking at your website, it talks about investor readiness. Maybe, you know, since we know that there's a whole pillar challenge and there's capacity weaknesses within organizations, maybe we can talk a little bit about investor readiness and tell us what that is.
Well, I think to sort of back up a step, I guess, okay, and talk about why this is relevant. And in the experience that I've had as a venture capitalist, as an investor, and as a business advisor, what I've found is that almost always, unless you're dealing with a very experienced business leader, almost always they have a lack of understanding of the investment process and what investors look for. And part of this relates to the fact that the business leaders have a tendency to spend most of their time focusing what goes on with inside their company. So they're focused on production, they're focused on delivery of services, their employees, you know, what's going on between the four walls.
Yeah, and they got a problem in Saskatoon, they got a problem in some northern community, you know, what's happening in Flin Flon, or, you know, what's happening in their own backyard in their warehouse. You know?
Right. And yeah. So this is really about dealing with what's in front of you. And beyond that, what I tell my clients is that they should be spending, you know, if you're a business leader, you should be spending at least half your time looking out the window, not daydreaming, but thinking about and understanding what's going on in the marketplace and what's going on in your industry. And this is really what the fundamental difference is, where business owners tend to focus, again, very much on their company, very much on their products and services. That's only a piece of the equation for an investor. Investors are interested in markets, meaning what is the need in the marketplace that has to be fulfilled? What is the size of that marketplace? What are the trends that are affecting it in terms of the interests of consumers, whoever they may be, you know, people, companies, and so on? What are the trends in the industry? What's going on with technology? How is consumption changing? All these kinds of things, guess what? They have nothing to do with the company at hand. It's all about what's going on in that marketplace. And so what tends to happen when you have a company come in and meet with a potential investor, I mean, you can probably guess this. They have an hour. They spend 55 minutes talking about either their product or themselves. Mm-hmm. And again, yeah, this is a piece of the equation. None of that is relevant to an investor until they understand what the market opportunity is. And again, how are you going to approach that? And what's the competitive situation? And why would a customer choose you? So what I do when I work with companies to help them better understand this is I try to put them in the place of an investor and the things that investors want to know and need to understand in order to approve a loan or invest their money. And a lot of times I find it's revelational to companies. And you can imagine that because of this difference in perspective, most of the business plans that I see 95%, if not, you know, 98% of the business plans that I see, they're not investor ready because they don't focus on the areas that external parties need to see and understand. They focus, it's kind of like people talking two different languages.
Yeah, I could see that because if we talk about small business, right, and usually, and you and I probably have experienced this a lot in working with different clients, somebody had an idea, they started out of their garage, right? Mm-hmm. They built up a business and suddenly they find themselves being, I don't know, I'll say 12 employees. They're making $1.5 million mm-hmm. and they want to be a $3 million company. Well, that's a very different situation, you know, when you go from 1.5 to 3 million. Now, I know I'm using smaller numbers, right? But, and hopefully it makes the point, but even if they want to be a $5 million company or a $15 million company, there's some key elements that they must take into consideration.
Right. And that does relate to the investor readiness. And I call these fundamental business practices. That doesn't sound very exciting, but again, these are areas relating back to the pillars, having the right, the systems, the processes, the procedures, the right people in place so that you're actually building out a company. You're something more than just that product. Effectively, you're moving from what I call a project where, say, a company has a product and they sell a bit over here and a bit over here and a bit over here, and now they're trying to build capacity.
Yeah.
In order to do that, you have to build out those other functional areas. You need to put the right systems and processes in place. And now you're starting to actually create something that an investor can put their money into. In the absence of that, you don't have
that
the vehicle.
And because you and I really we work in the same space, so we're sort of competitors actually. If you think about it, but that's not here nor there. I often say to clients that you put in place today what you need for tomorrow, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's sort of what you're saying is that in order to build capacity, you got to put that in place today. For tomorrow.
And for today.
Yeah, for today.
Because if you're facing growth, and this is another thing that's a bit of a misnomer, is that business leaders sometimes think that growth will cure problems. If you have a problem today, growth doesn't make that problem smaller. It makes it bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually makes it bigger. The second thing is that growth has a way of needing capital. And again, people don't often think about that. They don't think that, say, in order to approach a large client opportunity, they're actually going to need money to buy inventory, to hire people, to lease space, to, you know, do whatever. You need money to approach those situations. And what you're investing today may not actually reap the benefits until tomorrow, but you still have to do it. It's not necessarily a future-oriented requirement.
Yeah, and which is interesting you would say that, because if I go back to the whole analogy of just starting off a business on your own, in a way, you're actually making that investment today that you need for tomorrow, right? I mean, because you started that space, but you just sort of maybe got beyond your own capabilities.
Mm-hmm. And you do see that. And, you know, sometimes I will meet clients that have grown the way that you're describing, and they recognize they're at a breaking point. They have to back up to put these fundamental systems and processes in place in order to support the growth that they're facing today, but also to be able to approach new opportunities. So, you know, it's interesting, but it's kind of a, you know, you can run, but you can't hide.
If you're
going to grow and if you're going to develop, this is a challenge that you're going to come up against.
Is there any one key thing that investors, because you talk about investor readiness, I mean, you mentioned about needs and trends and size and technology influence. Is there any one particular thing that investors look for in an organization?
Well, there's an argument amongst early stage investors between market and management. And it's interesting because I didn't say product, right?
Yeah, you didn't actually.
There's an expectation that products work. Otherwise, why are we having this discussion?
Yeah, you must have did something already.
But the product part comes back to the market opportunity and the need in the marketplace. Because if it isn't there, and if it isn't significant enough, if it's two people that want it, you can't build a company on that.
Yeah.
So there's the market argument, and then the management argument is not about just having people there, but it's having experienced people with the right skills who can successfully implement the plan to generate the financial results that are required to create a return on investment. Because in the absence of doing that, all you have is a plan on a piece of paper. And I think we both know that despite the fact that planning can be challenging, many of the failures happen in implementation.
In implementation, yeah.
That's the tough.
Action plans are incredibly important. You can have the best laid plans, but if you don't have your roadmap, your action plan done, you've got some major problems.
Right. So there's that sort of battle between market and management. You need them both. Which one's more important really depends who you ask.
Maybe what we can do is come back and talk a bit about action plans and then get to know a little bit more about this whole area. This is Richard Lamb for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Yep. Hanging out with Jennifer Bartman. And we've been talking about business. We've been talking about a lot of things, actually, getting investor ready, just the last segment. And I think importantly, and I think we both have sort of agreed, the action planning side, Jennifer. I mean, it's so fundamental to the other fundamentals. I mean, is that a good way to put it?
Well, this is the implementation piece. And, you know, like we said, you can have all the plans in the world, but if you can't implement them, it's just a bunch of words on a piece of paper. And so action planning is one of those things that, in terms of setting it up, I find it relatively straightforward to set up. Again, as an operator, I've had lots of experience in this area myself, but it's really a matter of taking a disciplined approach to identify what are the specific tasks that need to be done, how can we put them in order in terms of sequencing, you know, what pieces need to happen first before we can get to the next one. Who's responsible? And this is another big thing, because when everybody's responsible or three people are responsible, really nobody's responsible. And so every task should be the responsibility of an individual. And in some instances, it's a good idea to pair two people to work together on something, say where there's crossover between finance and marketing or production and finance, those kinds of things. And then it's really just a matter of having the discipline every single week to look at what is the progress on each of those tasks and how can we move them forward. And this is an area where I find business owners, a lot of times they don't have the patience, or maybe they don't have the time to do this. You know, some are very good at it, but some are a bit more challenged. Mm-hmm. And so things don't move forward, or they kind of go sideways and they're not quite sure how to handle it. So working with an advisor who can help manage the plan, oversee the implementation, help people when they get stuck, identify other things that kind of pop up along the way, because there are always things that do pop up along the way that you have to do, and help move them forward. You can get, you know, really good value from an experienced advisor who has a lot of implementation and operational experience to understand what the roadblocks and the challenges are.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you would say that, because when working with clients, often their project management skills come up as being a challenge. Operationally, in the sense of when you talk about the day-to-day products and services, mm-hmm. they're fine, mm-hmm. right? They're, you know, from their perspective, they're keeping their customers happy, you know, and they're able to deliver that box of nuts and bolts. I know I'm keeping it very simple, you know, intentionally. But when it does come down to the implementation plan, the action plan, they do become very challenged, because the everyday part of the organization. Now, this has been my experience. The everyday operational stuff gets in the way.
It's true. And the other thing that does occur to me related to that point is that when you talk about action planning tasks, a lot of times what we're trying to do is put things in place that weren't there before. And this is part of the fundamental systems, processes that need to be in a company, not just to help it operate well, but also to build value within that enterprise. This is one of the other big questions that happens is, you know, business owners are thinking about, can I sell my company? Can I transfer it to somebody else? And one of the really, I guess, humbling things that can happen is when you start to explain to people, well, you have a company that, again, doesn't have these business fundamentals in place. Maybe it's dependent on you. Maybe you have staff members working with you who can only ever be directed. They don't have the skills or the expertise to be able to take care of a functional area on their own. And these are all weaknesses, again, from an investor perspective, from the perspective of a potential acquirer. So the only way that you're going to change that is if you take really tangible steps to put these fundamentals in place so that now you're building value in the company. This is like teaching a small child to walk. Instead of having that, you know, child always kind of hanging on to the furniture, the only way you're going to help them stand up on their own 2 feet, just like your company, is to sort of put in that assistance to help them grow, right? To nourish that company and to help it grow.
It's interesting to touch on something because I had that moment where I came up through the professional ranks with the thinking of self-directed, self-managed teams. Mm-hmm. You know, and fundamentally with, you know, not all business, but I see it in mid-range businesses and I see it with small businesses. I'm going to stay in that space because the bulk of Canadian entrepreneurs are categorized as small business, 500 employees or less.
Yep.
That's like 99 point some percent of our economy or something, or 98%.
Yeah, it's like 99 or less is about 97%.
97%.
Just looked at those
so
numbers.
So it's very huge, right?
Yeah.
You know, and when I do get into dialogues about their people's abilities, on the one hand, I often hear in leadership, you know, well, why can't my people do this? You know, and you sort of touched on it, that maybe you don't have the right people in place, that they're expecting them to be self-managed, self-directed individuals or teams that just don't have the capability or capacity to move the action plan forward.
You have to be able to do. That's
yes.
what it comes down
to.
And that's one of the things, if there's a criticism, and I say this carefully, you know, if there's a criticism of leadership, quote unquote, oriented things, I'm a big believer in what's tangible. Mm. You can talk about things theoretically and you know, maybe how things should be, but at the end of the day, it's results driven.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if you can't do, especially in a situation nowadays where companies are very streamlined.
And they're working to be even more streamlined.
And there's not levels and levels of people. And
nope.
so results matter. What a person can do on an operational basis really matters as well.
The results. You mentioned about the action plan. I love the fact that you brought up the concept of having an advisor to work with you if you're challenged in maybe the skill set or
right.
capability or capacity to move the action plan
right.
forward. What exactly would an advisor do for you? Would they sit in on meetings? Would they come and hold people's hands? Like, what would that person do?
There's a range of things that they can do. I think one of the first things would be identifying all the tasks to develop that initial action plan, talking about who has the skills to be responsible for those areas, maybe identifying gaps where, say, there's no one within the business that has those skills. So how do you fill that? Maybe, again, an advisor can help in those areas, transferring knowledge, coming to meetings, going around the table, updating the plan, you know, pulling people out of the mud when they get stuck, coaching them on how to do things. These are all areas where advisors
yeah.
can help.
Yeah, they sort of become an act, depending on the organization, call it an acting manager, acting VP of mm-hmm. planning and implementation. You know, because I want to put the word planning in there because often you got to cycle back, right? The plan needs to be updated and everything, and then needs to be implemented.
Because
again.
This is evergreen. This
yeah, yeah.
isn't like, it's
yeah.
not like 10
Very
things
good
on the plan
evergreen.
And now we're done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is, if we are moving forward and we want to build value in a company and we're working towards, say, a successful financial track record of 5 to 7 years, which is what we need to be able to do at a minimum. This is an evergreen plan.
Yeah.
So we've got things we need to get done within the next few months, within the current year, within the next year, and so on.
And it's constantly changing and morphing depending on what's going
exactly.
in the marketplace. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Easiest way is jenniferbartman.com, and that's Jennifer with one N.
With one N. Yeah, we talked about that during break. Jenniferbartman.com. Right? Got it
That's
correct?
Right.
Yeah,
yep.
there we go. What a show we've been having. You're an awesome guest.
And thank you.
Very, very meticulous in terms of the dialogue. I really appreciate it. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what might it be?
I can't help but think about potential in terms of, you know, companies sometimes that do have great potential in front of them, but they don't reach it because there's a reluctance to, I don't know, seek out good advice, follow good advice, work with, as you said, off the top, the best people that you can find. These are the fundamental things that help create unprecedented companies that help really generate success. And so I would, you know, say to business owners, work with an advisor and find what that is for your company.
Yeah, great advice. I'd appreciate it very much. Jennifer, Thank you very much for joining me on Set for Success.
My pleasure.
Listeners, you know what I'm going to say. I'm going to basically thank you also, because without you, I wouldn't be hanging out here with you. So thank you. Thank you for tuning in. And if you have a question, an idea, a thought, maybe even a future guest, or maybe you want to go deeper with Jennifer and we have a further discussion on a key area, send me a note, richard@setforsuccess.ca. And I am going to ask you to do something, and it's something that I always want you to remember to do your best. Invest in the success of others and make your journey count.